Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Psychology Has It Backwards. I'm Judy Sedgman, and I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where summer has at last come, and it's absolutely lovely. And I'm with my dear, wonderful friend,
Christine Heath, coming to you from the Big Island in Hawaii.
Where it's always beautiful.
It's always beautiful and warm.
And just like Chris. So today we thought we would talk to you about a question that often comes up with people who ask about our work and ask about what would the practice look like if you got involved in it, and with clients who say, well, when are we going to get around to this problem or that problem? And that is, if the people who work in the three principles do not focus on solving problems or addressing issues with clients, which is kind of the psychological model that most people are used to, then what the heck do we do? And, you know, I think the most beautiful part about the answer to that question is that we don't so-called treat people, because the assumption behind that is that there's something wrong with people and there's nothing wrong with us and we can help them. And the fact is, there's nothing wrong with anybody. And people can reach out to each other and talk to each other's well-being and health in a way that awakens it and deepens it in both people simultaneously. And so if I were to answer the question, what do we do? I probably would answer it with the words of our good friend, Mark Howard, who called this work one time years ago at a conference. He called it a partnership of health. And that is that the assumption is that those people who practice from the standpoint of the three principles have found peace and contentment and a beautiful state of mind for themselves. Not that they never have low moods or not that they never get upset, but that they have the perspective of understanding how thinking works and what's going on. And they don't take negative thinking seriously when they do it. So we speak from that perspective, and we look for and speak to that in our clients. And since everybody has it, everybody has innate health, often for clients, it's a big relief. You know, it's like nobody's ever asked them something positive before, like, you know, do you happen to remember, you know, what you enjoyed at certain points in your life, or what are the things right now that are that, you know, you look forward to, or something like that, just to get them off the subject of, oh, my life is terrible, and so on and so forth. It doesn't mean that we're positive thinking. It just means that everybody has positive things to think about in life, but most of them are not focused on them, because we get very attracted to things that we call problems. Number one, because we live in a world that people are always talking about it, but also because they're much like routine, nice things in life. Having a good day doesn't attract your attention. It's just a nice day. You enjoy it. If you have a bad day, it's like it's filled with drama and all kinds of stuff to think about and tell your friends about. And so I think we get caught up in our dramas and in our problems and our issues, because they get our attention more than just a regular, pleasant, natural, nice day. So we, not that we spend our time with our clients asking about their nice days, but we try to explain what I started to point to in this opening, that if there's going to be a focal point in a three principles based intervention with someone or interaction with someone, the focal point is going to be on, you have health inside of you, just like I do, just like everybody does. And that's where you want to look.
You know, one of the things that I did in when I practiced traditional psychology mm-hmm. was that people would come in to see me and they had usually horrendous things going on in their life. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did was I tried to solve their problems. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'd be the same as my problems. And I'd be thinking to myself, I have no idea how to handle this myself. I don't know how I'm going to tell you how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So I would make something up. Well, go do this or say that or do this. And the next week they'd come back. They wouldn't have done what I said. Thank God, probably. And they would not even be thinking about that problem, but they'd be on another problem. Mm-hmm. And so it'd be the like the problem of the week. And I noticed that that happens with people as therapists is when you get into just the client comes in and you're listening to the client, which is good. I mean, you want to listen to the client. But what they're telling you is what they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. That's it. They're not really telling you about their life. Because if you ask their friends or their parents or who else, if that's the way reality looks to them, they'll probably tell you a different story. So when you're trying to deal with people's reality as they tell you about it, you don't really know if there's anybody else in the world that sees it like that. They're just telling you how they see it. So when you're listening to the content of their thinking, they're going to have lots of problems because they're in that problem-solving mode of thought. Mm-hmm. So they have to make up a problem and then they got to think about it. And so we all do this. We all make up problems and then we start chewing on it. And we think of, well, it could be this, and it could be that, it might happen this way, it might happen that way, and oh my God, I don't know which way it's going to, what should I do? How will I know which is the right one? Because we're making it up, and we kind of know that, but we don't know it, right? Like intellectually, we don't know it, that that's how it works. Mm-hmm. So we keep trying to figure it out, and that's, I think, the innocence in therapy is that therapists think that their job is to help people to deal with their problems. Mm-hmm. Rather than what we're doing is we're saying, hey, your problems are there because of an innocent misuse of your own thinking. Right. And that life, I mean, stuff happens in life. I mean, people get raped and their houses burn down and, you know, bad things happen to people. Like one of our guys in my domestic violence group, Clean and sober house he's living in got sold by somebody else and they're going to remodel it, make it nicer. But in doing that, they're going to kick everybody out. So he's now in housing in Hawaii is like a super, super bad problem, right? So he gets himself so worked up that he's practically ready to go back to jail because that looks like a safe place to be, right? Mm-hmm. Because he can't think outside of the box. Like he can't think to get himself to a place where there's Wi-Fi so he can be in attendance for the group and not get sent back to, not get a negative report sent back to his PO. Well, what happens is that when we're, the client comes to you and they're already in this problem overwhelming mode usually, and it's either what I call inside thinking or it's outside thinking where they're, you know, talking a lot about the problems outside of them, or they're inside thinking where they're thinking about what's wrong with me and why doesn't life happen. But either way, they're searching for well-being. They're searching for happiness. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to find it in their thinking. So when they come in and they tell you about their thinking, they're telling you about the way life looks to them based on the state of mind they're in, not the truth about their life. Mm-hmm. Because as we all know, we've all had this happen where somebody says, hey, Chris, somebody so-and-so said that you said blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no. Like one of my students once said that I told him that the only diagnosis we use at the clinic is adjustment disorder. I said, you know, but I didn't say that, of course, but that's what he heard. I said, we frequently use that because that's how we see things is people are adjusting to life in a way that's not very healthy. So adjustment mm-hmm. disorder to me mm-hmm. works for a lot of things. But you see, it's kind of like the things that we listen for, the things that we see it's all relative to the state of mind you're in. So right. When a client comes in a low level of consciousness and they start telling the therapist about how they see their life, and the therapist listens to it, it seems like there's truth there for both of them. Like mm-hmm. The therapist starts to see like that's really the way that this life is. And the client thinks, oh, and the therapist sees it this way too, so it must be true.
Right.
And it gets more validated.
You know, when I first learned about the principles, I was not a psychologist by any means, and I was a consultant. And my job was to solve people's problems, you know, because I was a medical practice management consultant, and I would go in and work with doctors' practices in their offices to solve problems. But, and so when I first started hearing about the principles, I thought, gosh, first thought I had is that would just put an end to my whole business if I had to see life that way. And the second thought I had was, but I bet you they could solve their own problems and we could do more interesting work with them. And it was so interesting. Fortunately, those two thoughts came sort of close together. I didn't give up. But it was such a very strange revelation to me because I think we live in a world, you know, business, everything is focused on let's fix what's wrong. And so is therapy. So people assume that if life isn't going the way they were hoping it would, there must be something wrong with them or somebody else. And the same thing is true in businesses. If something's going wrong in the business, you know, we don't look and say, is there another more creative way that we could solve our business issues? We are looking around to say, who do we fire? Who made the mistake? I hear it on TV all the time. You know, the reporter will be standing in front of somebody where some catastrophe happened and say, who do you blame? And I think we just have that come so quickly to mind that it must be, you know, must be somebody's wrong, something's wrong. But, you know, as Chris said, all you're hearing from people and from yourself is how the world looks to you and the state of mind you're in at that moment. And when people learn that their state of mind is hugely important to how they see the world, and they learn that their state of mind is connected to an understanding that's deeper than the thinking they're doing, when they start to see that, they don't take their own thinking seriously. They step back and they'll go like, I'm in a really bad mood. I would never think that normally. Or, you know, they'll look for the good in a situation. Or they'll look for an opportunity for having a creative moment with somebody. Well, let's step back. You know, I became kind of well known in my own business for saying, well, let's not try to solve this right now because we're getting too caught up in the details. And which is something I would have thought was good only 6 months before. But as I got into the principles, I thought, no, the answer is never in the details you know. It's in what you don't know. And what you don't know is not already in your mind as a problem. It's the unknown. It's mysterious. It could be anything. And in order to see it, you have to clear your head of what you're already thinking about and allow a moment of silence, a moment of wisdom to step in. But when I saw that, the first thing I did is I changed the whole model of my business. And I taught everybody in my company and myself that when we're working with clients, we treat the state of mind before we talk business, which I had never thought of before. And in my whole years in business and all of many jobs I've had and many leadership positions I've had before that, it never dawned on me that it made any difference what mood people were in when they came into the room. Or what the feeling was in a meeting, or what was, you know, whether people were really present and listening. And that just didn't even factor into my thinking. It was like 10 o'clock, let's get going. And, you know, when we did that, I don't know that the clients even noticed it, you know, but we would like take the first few minutes. I changed the way the room was, and I would put flowers on the table, and I'd serve tea and coffee and cookies or fruit or whatever the time of day called for. Just nice little touches because doctors are busy and they often don't have time to eat. And they need a cup of coffee and they come to a meeting. They appreciate having something nice. And we would just chat for a few minutes until everything, you could feel the pressure go down. You know, they'd come in all busy and blah, 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 going on and on about some so-and-so and what's some bad thing that happened and something that's going on in the hospital. And then, you know, we'd put out the cookies and the coffee or the fruit. And we'd just sit there and say, well, how are your children? Or, you know, how's it going with, you know, your new house? Or how's your search for property at the beach coming or whatever? And it would get their mind off their day just for a moment. And then the next thing you know, they're thinking about a whole different, their thinking just goes in a whole different direction. And then you can say, okay, well, let's start the meeting. And you're dealing with people that are present and their mind is clear. The problems of the day are not on their mind, getting in the way of what you're trying to talk to them about. And that small adjustment meant so much. It made such a huge difference. I can't tell you what a difference it made in the whole tenor of our relationship with our clients and our business, just acknowledging that that what looks like a problem when you're in a low state of mind or you're agitated or anxious or upset looks like a situation when you're not. Just like, well, I thought I'd bring this up because we're going to have to address it in the next week or so is a lot different than we've got this problem and we've got it. And I honestly think that some of these very simple, small things, some of the differences just in the way with some understanding of how thought works that we think about ourselves and other people, it smooths the choppy waters.
You know, I think that's so important because not only even you can hear as you talk and you share that, Judy, it's like your state of mind changes when you do that.
Yeah.
Because you're not focused on problems and thinking and processing. So the point here is that mental well-being is before problems.
Yes.
And if we point people to that space, that state of mind that exists before the contamination of our own personal thinking, we know what to do with our life. We don't need to be having somebody tell us what to do because they don't know. Like, just like I didn't know what my clients needed to do. And mm-hmm. I felt a lot of pressure thinking I should. You know, that somehow it was up to me to run their life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see how much that developed dependency on me as a therapist, that somehow I could fix them or I could tell them how to live their life or that I knew what they should do. Now, when people ask me stuff like that, I'll laugh and go, I have no idea what you should do. My job is to get you into a state of mind where you know what you should do.
Right.
And that's what true empowerment is.
Right.
Right. But if you're sitting there problem solving, going over what's wrong in their day, how they've been wronged, you know, like what's not going well, like sometimes people will go, they'll have their list, as we call it. They have a list of popular topics. And so they're either getting victimized by somebody or something is unfair or, you know, something in their life is, again, happening to them. They say, why does this happen to me all the time? And everybody says that at some time. Why does this keep happening to me? Well, duh, because it's coming from you. That's how your thinking is interpreting your life.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of the deal is that when you're focused on trying to fix what's wrong, which is a problem or a trauma or an experience or whatever it is, you're trying to change a person's thinking, like cognitive therapies, looking at reframing and reshaping and changing the content of thought, but it's already created. It's like, who cares about it? Let it go. It doesn't exist. If you point people back to their wisdom and let them know and help them to see that they have their own answers, they can start to make changes on their own. Mm-hmm. Now, a really good example of that is this domestic men's group that I do, because I do it with this guy, Louis Pavel, thank God, because most of them have thoughts about women, strong women especially. They do not like to be told what to do. Immediately, I'm their mother, you know, abusing them again. And Louis will just come in and tell them to shut up. And literally sometimes when they get, because we have we call ranters, where they, you know, people that rant and they go on and on and on and on and on, and they're not, doesn't matter what you say, they can't listen to you. They're so caught up in the reality their thoughts create. Well, that's what happens when clients come in every week with the same kind of problem, the same thing. They're caught up in that thinking all week long. And so they just have a new variation of it when they come in each week, or something else to feel hopeless about because it's still the same problem. So you see, by teaching them how thought works and how to listen for their own wisdom and common sense, and then how to live in that beautiful state of mind, their issues and problems will be dealt with.
Yes. And they won't look like problems anymore.
That's right. Or they'll disappear.
Yeah.
But people start acting differently. They start being attracted to better people, people that are healthier. You know, like their whole reality will change.
Right.
You know, and that's that in this group, it's really funny because frequently they've like almost all of them have been through some other kind of program, substance abuse or in prison programs, or they all have therapists and psychiatrists and the whole deal, right? And so they come in and they're trying to figure it out. They get their pad of paper up and they're trying to figure it out. And we go, no, 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 this is just the listen. You know what to do. And they've never been treated like they were okay.
Yeah.
Because their malfunction is huge. Mm-hmm. But if they find that feeling, one of the guys was talking last night, he said, you know, I've learned more in this class than I've learned anywhere else. I can see how my thoughts work. I can see how I get caught up. I do. I still get caught up, but you know, he said, I know it's just my thoughts now. Like, that's huge for this guy. This guy's like a chef. He's, you know, been through treatment. He's been through all kinds of stuff. But for him to have that awareness that he's the thinker and his thoughts are creating a stress, then he, when he starts to get worked up, because, you know, we have a lot of cooks right now for some reason, like four chefs in the group.
Yeah.
I said, what is it about being a chef that you guys all end up in this group? And they laugh, ha, ha, ha. But what it is like they have so much going on. They got this order coming in, and then they got to cook this, and they got to make the rice, and they got to make it all come out at the end in one piece, right? So it's still warm. And one of the guys said, he said, I just realized that when I keep thinking about it all, I get really stressed out. And then I go outside, and I take a breath, you know, and then I come back. And I stop thinking about it, and I go into what we call the zone. And it's still a lot. I got to do a lot. I got to do it, but I'm not so overwhelmed and stressed out about it. Because there are jobs, you know, that you got to be, you can't be thinking about it or it makes you crazy, which obviously malfunction, it happens. But that's a beautiful thing for him to see that, like, oh, yeah.
That's a really great story, because a lot of people come away from hearing about our work with the idea that, well, I just don't want to turn into a vegetable and spend my life in a hammock reflecting. You know? And that's not at all what we represent. You know, it's having a quiet mind does not mean you have to be, you know, in the woods on a soft pad of moss, you know, reflecting as the birds tweet above you. It's not like that. You can have a quiet mind in the midst of chaos. Mm-hmm. And the people that I've worked with that have understood this the best are people that were in special teams in the military. I worked a lot with veterans, people that were SEALs or people that were, you know, on these teams mm-hmm. that we're sending to rescue hostages and things like that. Mm-hmm. They're picked for that ability to keep clear-headed in the midst of chaos. Mm-hmm. And it's in all of us, but for some people it doesn't surface because they overthink it. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I remember, one time I was doing a veterans group, and there was a SEAL, a former SEAL, he was out of the service at this time, who said,
SEALs.
Pardon?
They're always SEALs. They don't ever get out of it.
Yeah, they never stop being SEALs. But he brought that up right away. Yeah, but he said, you know, the thing I loved about being in the SEALs was that we didn't have to think. We didn't have time to think. And we were trained to follow our gut, to stay calm and follow our gut. Well, to me, that's the SEAL version of find a quiet mind and follow your wisdom.
That's right.
Stay calm and follow your gut. It works just as well.
That's right. And then all of your training kicks in too.
Right. Everything you know comes to you when you need it. And what people don't understand about wisdom, we talk about wisdom and people get the idea that there's some, you know, huge revelation that the skies will crack open and so on. Wisdom is just the idea you need right now that comes to you from before your personal thought. It comes through you from before thought. And when that happens, you feel this sense of like, that's right. Yeah. It just seems simple. And you can act on it without asking a lot of questions.
You know, two things happen that I think are important. I know we're kind of getting toward the end of our half hour here, but solving problems does not make people happy.
No.
So they come in and they tell you about this problem that's bothering you, and you focus on that outside world as being real and a problem. You're missing the point that it's because of the way they're seeing the outside world that makes it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may have gotten themselves in a pickle. Like Joe Bailey used to talk about that a lot of people are going through life driving their car in drive, but looking in the rearview mirror. Now it would be, you know, the little camera that comes up on the dashboard that has the picture of the back. It's like you got the car in reverse, but you're trying to go forward and you keep running into things and you don't know why. Well, it's because you're not going the right direction. And so when you're taking people into their thinking and their problems, you're just going into the content of their thinking in that state of mind. Doesn't matter. That's not what they're there for. They're there to get relief, to find peace, not to understand why they are the way they are.
It's more like understanding what could be.
And what'll happen is when you do that, people get insights about their past, about themselves on their own. Like I was had a compulsive eating habit, right? And when I was learning the principles, I was quieting down, thinking I was as quiet as any human being could possibly be. And I went down for my training, and Enrique Suarez was the psychologist that was teaching me. He took one look at me that day, that time, and he goes, "I don't know what's going on with you, but you better go clean it up. You're thinking way too much." It's like, I don't think a lot. I don't think. I've learned not to think. How dare you say that to me, right? And I settled down and I thought, okay, so what do I think a lot about? And the first thing that popped in my head was weight. I think a lot about weight and dieting, calories, what I look like. Yeah, I could stop thinking that. And then this thought pops in my head just so fast. It was like, if you do that, you're going to be like the fat lady in the circus. And then I remembered going to the carnival back in the day where they would have people that were morbidly obese, like, you know, 500 pounds, sitting there without much clothes on. And people would look, and my mother took me to see this person. And I got so affected by it, I thought, oh, I don't want to look like that. And then I became fearful that I would be overweight. So when that thought came in my head, like, oh, you're going to be like the fat lady in the circus, the next thought was, yeah, but if I was in a beautiful, happy feeling, it would not matter. And then I realized that I got, that would be a little trauma. I got traumatized as I looked at that woman. That thought got in my head, and that's what created my anxiety and fears of being out of control. So you see, it's kind of like if there's stuff that you need to see, it'll come to you when you are in a better space, in a higher level of consciousness. So it's not like you pretend it's not happening. And people say, should I pretend it's not there? It didn't happen. or do you want me to pretend that it just didn't happen? No, it's not that. It's just focusing on how it works and how to get in a better feeling. And then the health will come from within you. You'll see what you need to do or what you did. You know, like another woman I worked with was in a lot of foster homes, ton of foster homes. So she came in her early 20s and, you know, I asked her, I said, well, were you abused in any of those homes? Because she had victim on her mind big time. She goes, no, I don't remember anything from my childhood. I just don't remember anything till I was about 13. It's like, okay. So she came in, learned about the principles. She got in a good place. She left. And about 2 or 3 years later, she comes back in. She'd gotten married. She was having a child and she was anxious, a little anxious. So she wanted to get a tune-up. And so I said to her, I said, now, did you ever remember if you'd been victimized or not? She goes, oh, yeah, no wonder I was a mess. I went through all kinds of stuff in those foster homes. I just didn't remember them until I was better. And then they didn't bother me. See, that's a different, totally different way of finding health than processing and problem solving.
Yeah, because the answers come from a whole different level of wisdom and understanding. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're all looking for. We're looking for, if we want to address something in our lives, we want to address it from our best possible state of mind and the wisest perspective we have. Mm-hmm. Because that's where we're going to get a good answer. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do anyway when we're not solving problems.
Yeah. Well, everybody have a good week. Don't try to solve your problems. Try to have fun and enjoy your life.
Right. Take care.
Aloha.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.